from the studios of WAER.
And he's standing up into the goal line. Touchdown, Syracuse.
Battle gets a screen, pull up, is good. Tyus Battle from 20 feet, and with 2.5 on the clock, Syracuse leads by one.
Long outlet pass, Ryan Simmons inside. He scores the game winner. Give the assist to Don Madonna. Syracuse wins 11-10.
Comes the Ostrom Avenue podcast.
To Boeheim, quick trigger three from the top. He knocks it down, and we're tied at Spectrum Center.
15 left. He shoots and scores. Tucker Dordovic.
Perhaps the biggest upset in program history comes on Friday the 13th.
And now, your hosts, Brendan Mortensen and Owen Valentine.
Hello, everybody, and welcome into this October the 9th edition of the Ostrom Avenue podcast, and another beautiful Saturday fall afternoon here in the city of Syracuse. Frankie Ranowski joined alongside special guests Owen Valentine, Brendan Mortensen, and Jonah Karp, and we're here getting ready to go through the second half of Syracuse football season.
Wow, my voice sounds a lot better.
Yeah, a little deeper.
A little deeper, a little more full. I'd really like that intro. I'm Brendan Mortensen. He's Owen Valentine. We are joined by special guests Jonah Karp and Frankie Ranowski. We're talking Syracuse football. We're talking a little mid-season report cards, looking back at this 3-2 record, what's brought us here, and what we can expect going forward. Owen, start with maybe an opening statement.
I don't know how to describe the Syracuse football season to this point. 5 games in, 6 weeks in, it's mundane, I think, is the first word that comes to my mind. There's not really anything to it yet. I think it was surprising to see the start that they had. I think expectations were a little bit higher, whether that is right or wrong. I'll keep my opinions to myself to start off on that. But I think that this is a team with a simple schedule to finish out the season. There's a weak ACC. They've got 7 straight ACC games. Wake Forest is the only ranked opponent left on the schedule at 19, and whether they'll be there in the final week of the season, I'm not sure. So at this point, first half of the season, eh. But we're not here to listen to me today. We've got two special guests, Jonah Karp, Frankie Ranowski, here to shine a little bit more light on the first half of the season and the second half of the season. So Jonah, I'll start with you.
Give me your takeaway here.
What is the first half of the season?
We are here to listen to you. I'm just a guest.
I'll be honest. I did not come here for that.
Well, I tune in every week to listen to Owen. Brendan, not so much.
Thank you so much, Jonah. That's
what was the question? I totally forgot.
Give me
so much for listening to Owen. Right?
Give me your impulse reaction, your first response to the first half of the season.
Well, here's the thing. This team's going to make a bowl game, but we expected that going into the season. We also expected a lot more from this team going into the season. The team's going to win 3 more games. So they're, at the very least, you'd say, whoa, they're going to finish with a 6-6 record during the regular season, right? You figure, okay, 3 home games, Pittsburgh, Boston College, Wake Forest, chalk all those up as W's. 6 wins on the schedule. I mean, yeah, you could argue, but like Duke, Louisville, Florida State, these are all winnable games. Even NC State on the road is a winnable game for Syracuse. This team's going to make a bowl game. It's not going to live up to the expectation that was set for them at the beginning of the season. I'm kind of with you in what is this team right now, 5 games in? It's hard to tell. I'll tell you what, the Maryland loss looks a whole lot worse now than it did when they actually lost to Maryland, because Maryland got blown out by Penn State, albeit Penn State's a good team, but they lost 59-0, and they also lost to Temple. Temple's not a good team.
Yes.
So that loss looks really bad.
Frankie, same question to you. Just keep it rolling. Give us the first half of the season in a nutshell.
A word that is used with not enough frequency is whelming, because people are frequently overwhelmed and they're frequently underwhelmed. And
really enunciating the H there. I like it.
Appreciate it, pal. And I think that the start of this season was very whelming. It was just pretty meh. You said it, Owen. It just felt like a pretty pedestrian start to the year. Nothing too exciting. And, yeah, the Maryland game was terrible. But other than that, it's just felt honestly, like the rest of the ACC, and I know we'll get to the teams ahead, but a lot of the ACC is sitting at this about 3-2 record with the second half to go, looking pretty whelming, and that's it. So I would say, meh. That's what we've been looking at.
Not to hijack the show, but while we're on the topic of whelming, Frankie, I'm curious about your opinion because I got into a debate with somebody yesterday. Is chalant a word? Because you could be nonchalant, but chalant, no one says chalant.
This opened up a big can of worms.
Wow, that's an excellent, excellent question. I mean, yeah, if I'm wearing a suit and walking at a brisk pace, you'd say he's walking pretty chalantly.
All right.
Okay. To get back to Syracuse football.
Starting up chalant. But wow. Brendan, we'll kind of kick it to you because you're yet to share that kind of first thought on the first half of the season.
To play devil's advocate for this Maryland game a little bit, that team is incredible in September. I think there was a stat when Syracuse played them that over the last 3 years, they were like 10-2 in the month of September. For some reason, they just consistently get everybody's hopes up and then immediately crash them to the ground. They do it every year. I was talking to my cousin who goes to the University of Maryland. Every single year, they start out so promising and then just crash and burn. So I don't think the Maryland game is as bad as people will give it credit for.
Plus, still rolling with a new head coach.
Right, exactly. And Tommy DeVito still kind of settling in a little bit. So I'll give an excuse for the Maryland game. But I think whelming is a good way to put it.
Yeah.
I think Frankie put it well. I mean, the Western Michigan and Holy Cross games, sure, the offense looked good, but, I mean, how much are you going to take from Western Michigan and Holy Cross, really?
Well, you look, and it's a tough schedule to open up the season. Two games on the road, and then you take the number one team in the country, Clemson, at home, and you start 1-2. But since then, things have looked a little better. You get kind of your two games that can get you back into the swing of things in Western Michigan and Holy Cross. That Western Michigan game, a whole lot closer down the stretch than you might have anticipated or thought after Syracuse gets out to a 21-zip start. And then Holy Cross was what everyone, including Vegas, thought it would be. Spread was 38.5 points, and Syracuse wins by 38. So it's exactly what you expected those next two games. But now that we've got this five-game sample size, the first three didn't look too promising for SU. The last two with a little bit of upward momentum. What is a unit that you've kind of been pleased with to this point? What has stuck out as a bit of a surprise?
I don't know if it's – well, it's definitely not a surprise, but the most pleasing part of this team right now is the special teams unit. Yeah. Sterling Hoffrichter is out of this world, but he's really been the only consistent force, him and Andre Schmidt. But we knew those two guys were the staple of this team. Those two guys were the certainties of this team going into the season. We didn't really know what we were getting out of the quarterback position or the offense in general. We didn't really know what we were getting out of the defense, especially after all of these injuries to the secondary started happening. So that's been the biggest win for this team so far. But if your punter's your best player, you're not a very good football team. And that's just the reality.
Yeah, it's tough to win on the back of a punter. But Frankie, we'll kick it to you. What is, maybe it doesn't have to be a surprise, but is there something outside of the special teams that has pleased you at all?
I think Tommy DeVito has been given the opportunity to use ample weaponry in the receiving core. Now, he hasn't used it to its fullest potential, but we've seen multiple guys have really good games. Taj Harris in Holy Cross, Tristan Jackson against Western Michigan, and he's been pretty solid this season. We've seen a slight appearance out of Aaron Hackett. So I think if there's one thing to be happy about going forward is at least, you know, the O-line's been struggling, but at least for Tommy DeVito, you know that the guys he's aiming for, he's got a pretty solid crew, and I think they've shown it so far.
And how about the linebackers? Yeah. That's the unit I'm going to point out. You've got Lakeem Williams, who people were expecting to be good, but I don't think anybody was expecting him to play this well. He leads the team in tackles with 39, Andrew Armstrong in second with 27, and he also leads the team in sacks. Lakeem Williams has 3.5 sacks on the year, which is one more than Alton Robinson, 1.5 more than Kendall Coleman. This guy's been playing out of his mind. I think he's arguably been the best defensive player for Syracuse this year. I mean, Alton has played better than his sacks numbers would indicate, but Lakeem Williams has been fantastic. But it's interesting, the weapons have been good for Tommy DeVito, but they go as DeVito goes. obviously, mm-hmm. because, you know, he's the one who has to get the ball there. DeVito has played well against Western Michigan and Holy Cross. Frankie and Jonah, I'll ask you guys, how much are you buying into the Tommy DeVito turnaround?
I'd like to jump in here about the Holy Cross game because, you know, the counting numbers look pretty decent, 4-1 touchdown to interception ratio, but I was on the don't mean to toot my own horn. I was on the sidelines for that game, watching in that ground floor perspective, and he had. I thought Tommy DeVito's performance against Holy Cross, the team's overall performance, I thought was pretty disappointing. And you know, they won 41-3, but it felt like there were another two touchdowns that should have been on the board. Mainly, my problem was. He was 19-31, DeVito, and it just felt as if it wasn't until the very end of his performance that he actually started to exude some kind of confidence and patience and look at each of his options and make his progressions. He was unnecessarily rushing, I thought, for at least the first two-thirds to three-quarters of that game. So, yeah, I mean, I thought that Holy Cross game, I was actually pretty disappointed with his performance, especially after a pretty solid performance against Western Michigan.
Just to echo that, I think you could argue Western Michigan was the best performance of Tommy DeVito's career, and then he took a step back against Holy Cross, and that's just something you don't want to see. Mm-hmm. They should have beaten Holy Cross in blowout fashion. That was expected. But then Tommy DeVito just didn't show up in the way he showed up against Western Michigan. I think it took everyone aback.
Well, if you look at the overall stats, I feel like they've kind of been deceiving for DeVito because he's got 11 touchdowns. Yes, there's five interceptions on there and a couple fumbles. But when you look at a couple of these stat lines, it's not the most telling of how he's played. I think there were some where he looked better than he played. You mentioned Holy Cross, and there were a couple of spots early on where you were like, okay, the stat line says he played well, but we watched him make poor decisions. We watched him overthrow receivers and other things that, to that nature. But one of the biggest things that has kind of been lingering on every Tommy DeVito conversation has been that O-line. And there have been some sporadic moments where you're like, okay, this O-line and the unit can play well. They can open up holes. They can create options for the running game and for DeVito. And then there's a whole lot of moments where that just hasn't been the case. Can the O-line figure it out this season, I guess, is going to be the question.
Well, it doesn't help that Tommy DeVito's had a revolving door of offensive linemen in front of him. I mean, it's just hard to build a chemistry with your offensive linemen when you don't really know who the starters are going to be week to week. Tommy DeVito, I guess, to answer your previous question, Owen, that aspect of Tommy DeVito, the fact that he runs now, is probably the most surprising thing that's occurred this season. Against Western Michigan, he looked like Eric Dungy, but in a Tommy DeVito uniform. Yeah. It was really remarkable. He broke out for like a 50-yard run. He was just running all over the place. And same thing against Holy Cross. I'm not too quick to say he's now a dual threat quarterback, but you certainly as a defense have to consider the fact that he could take off at any moment and he's got good wheels. So that's how you balance a lack of chemistry among the offensive line. You take off and you either throw the ball outside of the pocket or you take it yourself. And so that's how Tommy DeVito's been able to, I guess, reverse that.
Have we seen him with much of an ability to throw out of the pocket, though?
I mean, into the season, I think everyone assumed pocket passer. He's
got
such a strong arm, and that was kind of what you saw out of high school DeVito. And then when he came in for his limited snaps last season, it seemed like it was a lot of out-of-the-pocket stuff, and he's comfortable in the pocket. But he's had to quickly evolve into a non-pocket passer, a mobile passer, and someone who's going to make throws on the run. Whether he's executed those throws, not sure, but is that what you thought? Did you see him as the pocket guy, or did you see him as more of a mobile guy?
I don't know exactly how to see it because I feel like he's, you know, going back to the Holy Cross game, I feel like he's not patient enough in nailing those pocket passes that he was supposed to be. You know, to bring this up, Owen, you and I talked about this after the Western Michigan game, that it seems as if he works best not in the gun, but under center.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure if it – because if I think this team works at a faster pace when he's under center, mm-hmm. Play after play, and I don't know if it helps him get into a better rhythm.
Yeah.
But you and I both thought that was the case after the Western Michigan game.
And I don't know if it's that Tommy DeVito – I wouldn't necessarily say Tommy DeVito is a great runner. Like, the thing with Eric Dungy was that you knew Eric Dungy was going to run the ball, and he did it anyway. DeVito, I feel like, I don't know, against Western Michigan, it kind of felt to me like nobody in the building thought he was going to run. And sure, he broke one off for like 50 yards, but there wasn't a defender within 50 yards. I mean, he was out of the pocket and he was up the sideline and nobody was even close. Because even when he's running RPOs, they're pretty much just RPOs because you've either got the one pass option to the outside or he's going to turn around and hand the ball off to Mo Neal and Abdul Adams. You're essentially taking that second R out. Like, there wasn't really an option for Tommy DeVito to run the ball that often. And yes, he had success against Western Michigan and against Holy Cross. But from watching the games, it kind of just felt like he ran when there was no other option. And he caught the defense off guard, which isn't necessarily a bad thing, but I think if defenses start to game plan against that a little bit, I don't think there's any way he's going to come close to the success running the ball that Eric Dungy had.
He did also have a rushing touchdown against Western Michigan, so he used his legs to find pay dirt, which is
right.
Which is something we're not common to seeing with Tommy DeVito. He also hasn't really shown it against a formidable defense. He didn't do it against
right.
Clemson. Syracuse really hasn't had the opportunity, aside from the Clemson game, to showcase Tommy DeVito's running skills, if you will, against a pretty good defense. NC State doesn't have a terrible defense, and once you start hitting all these ACC games, maybe we'll see this as a consistency, or maybe we'll just see the old Tommy DeVito, the pocket passer type of Tommy DeVito.
NC State might have the second best defense in the ACC. A lot of us thought that was going to be Syracuse, but this NC State defense is legit. They are second in the ACC in yards allowed per game. They've also got a guy up the middle named Larell Murchison who had 3.5 sacks against Florida State last week.
Yeah, and he had 3 sacks
He's
in
ridiculous.
A game against Virginia last season. Their run defense in terms of rushing yards allowed is 6th in the nation. They've played 5 games so far. They've held 4 opponents to under 100 rushing yards. And what we've kind of seen, at least through my perspective and what I've taken out of this, is the Syracuse offense has kind of been as good as their running game has been, because that's the orange is the new fast type offense plays off of the run game. Yes, it's a pass heavy offense when it is playing fast, and that's why it's so fast. But when the run game is working up the middle, when you're creating holes out of the O-line for the 5-6 yard first down gain, there are endless possibilities to continue the drive and to throw a deep pass on second down. And that's where Syracuse excels, is that big play ability. They've got that DeVito to Jackson kind of connection has looked really strong early on. There's a couple other options. They like to break off for a big play, and it all works off the running game. And you see NC State coming up this week. It'll be a huge test to see if Syracuse can combat a strong run defense and still create opportunities for a deep play down the field or to run that fast-paced offense.
Yeah, I don't think that capability is there. The beginning of the season was whelming, but I think the run game has been under that point. I personally think Abdul Adams has more reason to touch the football more than Mo Neal. And we've yet to see a game where really any of these guys has just really had their way with the opposing defense. And I don't see how that could possibly start against NC State. So I don't know. I don't expect a very great ground game against the Wolfpack.
Does anyone?
I don't expect a great ground game. I don't know if I expect a great offensive game overall. I mean, if Sam Heckel is still out for this game, which he most likely will be, I don't know who's covering Larell Murchison. I don't know who's protecting Tommy DeVito. I don't know if this offense is good enough at this point to overcome a strong ACC defense.
The problem is that this offense is lacking an identity. What is this? Is this a rushing offense? Is this a passing offense? Who's the number one target in the passing game? Who's the number one running back? It's hard to tell.
Well, I think Tristan Jackson has established himself as the number
but
one target.
But any given day,
it
could be Taj Harris. Sean Riley could break out for a big day. I mean, you don't know. You don't know.
You saw that Aaron Hackett the other day.
Aaron Hackett.
Just out of the blue, untouched pretty much in games 1 through 3, and then has 3 touchdowns in his last 2 games. So it's, I think the rotation is beneficial because you've got so many options, kind of as Frankie was saying, but you do like to have that incredible receiver that there are endless ones to kind of build off of in terms of recent years. There's always been the one presence that emerges to the top of the gang. And Jackson has done it, but this seems like a little bit more of a widespread and balanced situation. And I think it's beneficial for a quarterback who has had to struggle because he doesn't necessarily have time to throw. And when you've got multiple options and you've got to now have a guy that could be a number one target possibly playing against the second cornerback or lesser coverage, it creates an opportunity in a fast throwing game that you might not have. So it could be beneficial for Syracuse, but you're completely correct. There's no identity to the offense right now. And it's starting to formulate a little bit. I think there have been those moments that you would expect where you're like, wow, this offense really is that fast, high-powered offense that we're used to seeing under the Dino Babers era against Western Michigan and Holy Cross, but they haven't done it against the true opponent. And you mentioned Clemson is the only true defense they've really played. And they put up 6 points, and it was not a touchdown and a missed field goal, or and a missed extra point. It was 2 field goals. They didn't find pay dirt in that game, and they had options, and they didn't execute. So this team and the offense needs to find that identity, and I'm just not sure if or when it will get to that point.
And staying on this NC State game a little bit, we know how good the Wolfpack defense is, but overall, this is not a great team. It's a 3-2 Wolfpack team with wins over East Carolina, Western Carolina, and Ball State. They have a big loss on the road at West Virginia, and they got shellacked last week by a bad Florida State team, to the point where they are benching their quarterback, going with Bailey Hawkman, who was the backup. They had 3 potential options at the beginning of the season. They're now on option number 2. So we've talked about the Syracuse offense maybe not doing so well against this NC State defense, but this NC State offense is not great.
Yeah,
13 points against a mediocre Florida State team. Yes, on the road, but Florida State is not what they were a few years ago. So, Owen, I'll ask you, what are your expectations for this NC State game? Because it's really going to be a good Syracuse offense versus a good NC State defense and a bad NC State offense versus a Syracuse defense.
Well, I'll preface this by saying when I make a statement like I'm about to, it's usually incorrect. But I expect this to be...
So maybe you should say the opposite?
No, I'm going to stick with it. I expect it to be a low-scoring game, a defensive battle where neither offense has really been playing to the point where they're going to break past the opposing team's defense. NC State's defense has been their saving grace this season. And the Syracuse defense, yet while it hasn't played perfectly, has had a lot of moments. I think the absolute dominant performance against Liberty kind of showed the max potential. I know it's that lesser opponent.
Yeah, how much does that really mean?
Even in bigger games, Western Michigan, we said it, Elton Robinson was in the backfield pressuring the quarterback every single play. John Wasik had no time to pass in that game. It was just something that you could expect to see out of him. And even though he only has 2.5 sacks on the season, he's in the backfield every play. And I think that both of these defenses are going to have a consistent presence in the opposing backfield, and it's going to play dividends, and it's going to be a lower scoring game. And I'm saying if a team gets to 30 points, 22 points, the team will win.
Really just went down there.
22 is an interesting number.
Winning number.
Frankie, your prediction for tomorrow's game.
Yeah, I think Syracuse loses the football game. Because I think you're looking at about a tossback of every week, and I don't want to get ahead of where we'll be taking this discussion, but interestingly enough, NC State, Florida State, Duke, and Louisville are all 3-2. Pitt's 4-2, and BC is 3-3. And Wake Forest is a very good team. But I think Syracuse matches those teams pretty well in the sense that you know, something has to drastically change for them to win by multiple scores, I think, over any of those teams. I'm not saying they're going to lose all five of those games, but I think they go down south to Raleigh tomorrow night and do lose that game.
Jonah?
The one thing you could say about this NC State offense that might be their saving grace is their pass protection. They allow a sack on 2.6% of passing plays. That's 10th in the country. That's pretty good. The thing about this team, though, is that they're losing, for this game in particular, two of their key blockers. One of their running backs, one of their senior tackles. So if you're Syracuse, take advantage of that. Blitz heavily. Blitz a lot. Mm-hmm. Provide pressure on their quarterback, and they should be fairly successful.
Does this secondary have the capability to back up consistent blitzing?
I think it does. I think the last 2 weeks you've been without your two best defensive backs as well, in Ify Melifonwu and Andre Sisco.
Yeah, and there's still question marks this week, though, aren't they?
Yeah.
So you're still in that kind of lackluster secondary right now.
This is a team that can get burned right now pretty deep. Yeah. So I that does worry me a little bit.
But who's throwing it deep? You've got a quarterback who's coming in who has never started an NCAA game before. And he's coming in against a decent Syracuse defense with Alton Robinson and Kendall Coleman coming off the edge and Josh Black up the middle. So maybe this secondary can get torched, but they can only get torched if somebody's beating them down the field.
Exactly.
And I don't see Bailey Hockman beating Syracuse down the field.
Right.
He also has a short leash, which is hard to play with. And rightfully so. I mean, as your freshman quarterback the first start in your NCAA career, but kind of to take that bigger look ahead and get away from NC State and kind of start to take a peek into the rest of the season. You hit on it a little bit there, Frankie, but I just had probably 20 minutes ago, 30 minutes ago, 5 minutes before we started recording, I was talking with Manny Martinez about the rest of the schedule. And he made the statement, which I don't think I disagree with, but I'd love to hear your thoughts on it. 7 games left in the season. NC State, Pitt, Florida State, BC, Duke, Louisville, Wake Forest. Is there a game on the schedule where you can cross it off as a loss right now?
Well, no, I mean, that's exactly to the point, you know, I was making, that it just feels like, okay, you know, they're going to win this week and lose next week and win the next, you know, the order doesn't particularly matter because, you know, we're talking about teams that have exhibited the same kind of ups and downs that Syracuse has, you know, with Florida State actually showing up against NC State last week and Pitt beating UCF and then nearly losing to Delaware. So, I mean, they've looked shaky. BC, you know, losing by half of what Kansas scored. So each of these teams is, you know, there are Ostrom Avenue podcasts occurring at each of these other campuses, and I think they're saying the same exact things about their teams.
Jonah, same kind of process on that. Yeah. What do you see out of the rest of the schedule?
So there are 7 games left, and I mentioned it earlier, each of these are winnable games. Mm. At the same time, though, if this is the team that showed up against Maryland, this is a schedule remaining where Syracuse could realistically lose 4 of these last 7.
Yeah.
I mean, you just don't really know what this team is right now. So this team could win out. Because the schedule isn't tough. But a lot of these teams are probably looking at Syracuse and saying, oh, that's a winnable game. You could chalk that up as a W. This team just doesn't look that good right now.
You've got 7 coin flips on the schedule.
Yeah.
And the thing with the coin flip is you can get lucky and win all 7. You can get unlucky and lose all 7. Or what's likely going to happen is Syracuse goes 4-3 in this stretch or something along those lines, which I think a 7-win season is not a terrible outlook for a team that has struggled early on. And if there's the upward mobility, the upward potential, I'm not sure yet. There could be. There could not be. I think that's why you watch football. That's why you watch a team like this. But Joni, you seem like you want to chime in. You've got something here.
A 7-win season would be a disappointment. The bar was set a lot higher than 7 wins this year. I mean, people were talking Orange Bowl. This was not a tough schedule looking at it on paper going into this season. Mm-hmm. People really thought that this team was going to be better than they were last year. It just hasn't been the case. I can't say this enough. The best player on the team is a punter. That's not good.
To be fair, he's probably the best punter in the nation.
He's probably the best punter in the nation.
He's unbelievable.
But aside from Sterling Hoffrichter, there are just a bevy of question marks on this team.
Mm-hmm.
The one thing you can count on week in and week out is that the punting will be fine. That's a bit of a concern.
I'll get things started with a record prediction for the last 7 games this season. We'll go around and talk about it a little bit.
All right.
I think this team goes 6-1 the rest of the year.
Wow.
Is the loss to Wake?
I think the loss is at Duke.
Okay.
I think at Duke is a sneaky game, but maybe I'm just a homer for Syracuse football, but I think the loss to Maryland is an overreaction, and I think this team is better than what we're giving them credit for. I know you can't look at the Western Michigan and Holy Cross games and say, you know what, those are big wins, whatever. But I think you can look at aspects of those games and say that no matter what team you're facing, the things that were done well against Western Michigan and Holy Cross are transferable to other games. You can take what went well and move it forward as you go along in your schedule. I think this team wins 6 games.
Jonah, we'll send it to you. We'll go around the table. Give us the final 7 prediction.
I think 5-2. This team's going to finish 8-4. I say a loss at Louisville and maybe one more home loss. I don't know. The home schedule is kind of easy.
Wake Forest is an underratedly good team.
They are good. I don't know. It's the last game of the season. Maybe they lose the last 2 games, although that doesn't provide them any momentum going into a potential bowl game. So, I think they go 5-2 the rest of the way.
Frankie?
All right. Well, if we're going to continue the trend, it's 6-1, 5-2. I'm going to say 4-3.
Frankie's been buying low today.
Yeah. Because you know if they shoot over or if you over predict, I was going to try to make a prices right.
So you're setting your expectations low so that you won't be disappointed.
I mean, I'm not going to be disappointed either way. I can handle my emotions. Yeah, 4-3. I think it kicks off with a loss to NC State Thursday night. Because, you said it, Brendan, the game at Duke. Duke's a pretty decent ball club. The comparison I make, and I get it, the biggest difference is the man at the helm of the team. But the biggest difference I make is there's no way I could see this team beating Florida State 30-7 as it did a season ago. There's no way I could see this team, and obviously both are wildly different than last year, but I could see this team beating NC State in a 50-point shootout. So the reason because the record you put forth would be the same record as a season ago, before hitting a bowl game. And that's just really tough to see, especially because they did that last year and the ACC was tougher a season ago. So I couldn't see that's the comparison I make, why I say 4-3, maybe even 3-4, because this team would not be able to compete. A revolutionary statement. This team just would not be able to compete with the schedule from a season ago, in my opinion.
I'll tell you what. So I look at this schedule, and I like the way it looks in terms of you've had 10-plus days to prep for NC State. You play 4 games. You get a second bye week, November 9th, to prep for Duke, which is one of your bigger games on the schedule in terms of opponents that are a little more talented, and then you play your final 3. So you're playing kind of like, it's almost as if you've broken the season down into thirds that are a little bit uneven. You play 5 games, then a break, 4 games and a break, 3 games and a break. But I love the way that looks in terms of...
It's a very good point. Yeah.
Syracuse has had 10 days. Yes, NC State has had the same break. But Syracuse has had 10 days to prep for NC State, and they're going to get a bonus week to prep for Duke. That's a Saturday, and you're getting 13 days to prep for the remaining portion of the season. You can get some time off. You can let your players recover, rest, because it's a tough season. It's tough to play this week in, week out, grinding type of season where you've got people falling. You've got Syracuse's top two defensive backs with question marks, their top O lineman with a question mark. It's nice to be able to get that recovery. You can work the kinks out. With that being said, will they do it? I'm not so sure. I think if we could break into halves, I'm going somewhere between Jonah and Frankie.
So four and a half and 2.5?
Yes. I'll round up and go with the 5 wins to close things out. And if I was to predict the losses, I think they beat Wake Forest at home to end the season. I think a decent crowd will come out for that and maybe have a little bit of implications on that one. I think they lose to Pitt because Syracuse and Pitt
always find a way to lose to Pitt.
Yeah.
This is a Pitt team who barely beat Delaware, and somehow Syracuse will find a way to make that game
close. But it was a Pitt team that played a really solid game beating UCF, an overrated UCF team.
I'll toss a caveat on that one. If SU loses to NC State, they beat Pitt. So they lose one of those two.
Okay.
And then is it Duke? Is it a trip up at home against BC? I don't know the specific, but I do think 2 losses is going to be your bare bones minimum for the rest of the season. So 5-2 plus 3-2, 8-4. Not terrible. Obviously, you've got the high expectations after last season, but it's a lot of turnaround. So I think that's what you can expect. And when all is said and done, after a 1-2 start to finish 8-4 in the ACC, yes, it's a down ACC, I think that is a successful season with the personnel that's in play right now.
Frankie, Jonah, thanks so much for joining us.
Oh, thanks for having us on, Brendan.
I had an absolute blast. Love to do this again.
Yeah.
For Owen Valentine, I'm Brendan Mortensen. This has been the Ostrom Avenue Podcast. We'll catch you next time.